Welcome back to Inside the Bar Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. I'm Christy Barker, a career prosecutor from Savannah, Georgia. And in this series, we're going to be looking at injustice and where the criminal justice system breaks down. On July the 4th of 2017, Jerry Chambers and other OTM gang members terrorized the city of Savannah as people gathered to celebrate the holiday. Yet 7.5 years later, the Georgia Supreme Court failed to consider the evidence against him in reversing his felony murder convictions. How did we get here? I sat down with the detectives who investigated this case to go over the scope of these crimes and its effect on the whole community.
And welcome back to Inside the Bar Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. I'm Christy Barker, a career prosecutor from Savannah, and I have with me today, I've got two people that I'm super excited to have. I've got Brittany Dobbs, and I know you probably have another last name, but you're going to be Brittany Dobbs to me forever. And Rob Santoro, who is a longstanding contributor, but still like fucking amazing. And in case you're wondering, there's going to be cursing on this podcast. So. I wanted y'all first to introduce yourself. Brittany, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah. So my married name is actually Dobbs. So you got it right. That's good.
Oh, good. I did something.
Right. I think I was already married by the time I went up to homicide. So Everyone knows me as my married name. My name is Brittany Dobbs. I am the former homicide detective in Savannah. Left there in 2018.
So how long were you in homicide, Brittany?
So I was there for 2 years. I actually started with Savannah Police Department. When was that? 2012.
Wow.
2012. Yeah.
Wow.
So then did 2 years on the street and then did 2 years in CSU, the crime suppression unit. And then Rob was like, hey, you want to come to homicide? And I was like, I'd rather be an SVU, but I was like, I'll give it a shot. So, and then I just loved it. So much.
Well, can I just say that Rob has good judgment, and I think that you did a fabulous job when you were in homicide. We didn't get to try any of the cases that you were in.
I know. But we had some. It would have been so much fun. Like Gardner would have been so much fun.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like fun anyway. But with you, it would have been like, it would have been pretty epic.
Yeah, it would have. But, you know, at least it turned out right because you did the work up front. So that's pretty awesome.
That one was good.
And, of course, we have Rob Santoro. Talk to us, Rob.
I'm Rob Santoro. Glad to be back. Thanks for having me. I am super excited to be on with Brittany. Brittany, you were one of my first picks when I took over homicide as a sergeant. And I was recently asked to list the five best homicide investigators that I worked with, and I'm not gonna name all five, but you were in that list. Aww, so it was a beautiful thing to watch you come up from patrol and to see the investigator you became and the investigator that you are. That was pretty special to me as a sergeant. And I mean, I just, some of the cases I saw you work and just the skill and the effort, I mean, you just can't replicate that. So,
well, way to make me cry.
That's why we do this. We want to make people cry.
I mean that. It was always a privilege and an honor to work with you on cases like this.
I think that it was like meant to be that SVU didn't have any openings. And you were just like, hey, like you want to do it? And I was like, sure. And then I heard what SVU like actually had to do. And I was like, I can't take pictures of those things. I can't write search warrants for those things. So I am very thankful that I ended up in homicide instead of SVU.
Yeah, you're made to be the murder police.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, murder police all the way.
Murder police all the way. And you know that there was so much that y'all were doing during this stretch of time. So like it was what, 2016 to 2018 that you were there, Brittany?
Yes, correct. Yep.
So you're coming on the tail end of the 2015 push of like just huge numbers. Yep. And that it went right into 2016, if I remember right. Am I right?
Yeah, that's right. So I think I started in like August of 2015, but I technically started in the ag assault unit. But I was like helping I was learning from everyone at that time. And there were so many murders that I was getting exposed to a lot of stuff. like really fast. Yeah, and then it all kind of like poured over into 2016, which is just crazy. Like, yeah, just crazy. I think I don't even with my first murder, January of 2016, I believe. Yeah, so there was no stopping. It was just like go, 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 go all the time.
Right. And a lot of that, some of the shootings and everything else, all of them kind of, not all of them, but a large number of them kind of are related to what we're talking about today. So I dragged y'all on here because of the case involving Jerry Chambers. And I'm trying, because it is a big case, it's not one that I worked on directly, but it's the kind of thing that you couldn't ignore, where we were. It was high profile. When the actual case that went to trial happened, but there was so much going on before that. So which of y'all wants to tell me who is Jerry Chambers?
You got it wrong.
I can fill in a little bit of that, and so
I'll kind of give a, if I hear anything, I'll be like, oh yeah.
yeah, and I'll start. I'll just give you guys some props too for like at the beginning we were talking, catching up a little bit before we started recording, and both of you guys recognized Scott Waldrop, and he was the citizen victim in this case, and honor him. I think we call it the Waldrop case, not the Chambers case, because
I love that.
you know, it's about Scott in my mind. So
Well,
anyway.
and I do want to get back to the fact that Jerry Chambers is the defendant, but you have make an excellent point because Scott Waldrop was just an all-around good guy. Part of the reason that this case was high profile was because of who he was and how he was just a guy. And we are going to talk about how he ended up being the victim in this case, but it we shouldn't ignore the fact that this is a case that has a lot of sprawl, has a lot of gang stuff that we're going to talk about in a second, but it affects everybody and it affects the whole community in Savannah. So go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, so to kind of start, just a little background context with Savannah gang history. Back in like 2013 and 2014, there was a big group of like, they probably were only like 13 years old at that time, and I can't remember if we've ever talked about this before, but they were a group called YNIC, and it meant Young Niggers in Charge was what they called themselves, and they were basically a big group of kids that went around. They were doing crimes, breaking into cars and stuff like that, and the group was pretty big, and I want to say right around 2014 or so was when the group started to splinter a little bit into like three different subgroups. So you had the big kind of YNIC that broke down into like what would become OTM, or Only the Mob, OTF, Only the Family, and then the Grimy 1100 Boys. So those became like the three kind of subcategories of groups that kind of spawned out of the YNIC stuff. For this particular podcast, the groups that we'd focus on would be OTM, or Only the Mob, and then the Grimy 1100 Boys. And 1100 kind of they started as a group they called like Grimy, and they were sort of associated with a guy named Tony Crawford, was one of their main kind of leaders, who ended up dying in a murder case that Alan Sammons worked in 2015. That was actually like I think the first murder case that I worked with Alan once I came back from SVU. And so Tony Crawford and that group, they sort of started out as Grimy, and it was more of like a there was friends, but there was a big sort of family kind of association with that group of kids. The Morris family, the Morris Maxwell family, that it's kind of like one family. It was almost like more of a family group. But when then they moved to the 1100 block of on the east side there, I forget the which street it was, over by is it Grayson Avenue, somewhere over there, and Wahlberg. over that side.
Okay. Yeah.
That's when they started calling themselves 1100. That was a little bit later. That was more towards like 2017 when this incident happened. OTM kind of they stayed OTM, only the mob. They were a pretty big group. They kind of some of the main players there were like Daryl Milson, Tanavian Johnson. You'll hear Quando Rondo claim all kinds of OTM stuff. So that's kind of the two groups that we're kind of focused on here, but they were responsible for a significant amount of violence throughout Savannah during these years. And up till this time, it was a lot of shootings. I want to say, I'm not going to say that there weren't a lot of murders, but because there were murders that involved these groups, but I would say like there was a lot of non-fatal shootings, houses shot up, things like that. So it wasn't really until 2017 that the OTM 1100 stuff really, it caught a lot of traction because then they started like really hurting and killing people. And so then that year we had Brittany's case, which I'll let her talk about. She just did a phenomenal job on it. And then later in September, so Brittany's case was in July. Later on in September, there was a drive-by shooting where some OTM gang members tried to shoot a guy named Calvin Morris and Roderick Matthews. And Calvin Morris ended up shooting back and killed a kid by the name of Arafi Williams, who is kin to Quando Rondo. So that was an OTM side murder. And then a few days later after that, there were some 1100 people that went into OTM territory, tried to do a drive-by shooting, and basically the same thing happened. Somebody shot back and killed Jaheim Morris, and that was Rebecca Gregory's case, or Rebecca Parker. So that few months, it was like there was a lot going on with those two groups. So it's kind of the history up to 2017.
So we have a lot of retaliatory shootings after. Were there retaliatory shootings before all this had gotten started, or?
Yeah, there was retaliation shootings pretty much throughout. And then with respect to Jerry Chambers specifically, he was an OTM gang member, and he was actually wrapped up in a robbery shooting at the Savannah Mall where he tried to snatch an old lady's purse coming out of, I think, the Target at that parking lot and at the Savannah Mall on the south side. And she didn't want to give the purse up, and he basically shot her in the chest. And
Wow.
that ended up being Ricky Wiggins's case. Thankfully, that woman survived. But it ended up going to juvenile court because they didn't actually get anything from the old woman, so they did not consider it an armed robbery, and it went to juvenile court, not superior court. So I mean, we talk like the label of this is injustice, right? I mean, I always felt like
Yeah.
I get the armed robbery thing, but like I feel like shooting somebody should also count as like something that should qualify to superior court, because like, okay, you can conduct an armed robbery and that's pretty bad, but like you don't necessarily hurt anybody. Like if you shoot somebody, like you should
And hit them.
automatically be
Yeah.
tried as an
Yeah.
adult, in my opinion. Like that's you're gonna do some big boy shit, you're gonna have some big boy consequences. Like,
Exactly.
so that case ended up you could too bad Ricky Wiggins wasn't here to kind of give some of the details on it.
I
But
forgot that. I forgot that was
unfortunately,
Wiggins. I
yeah,
didn't realize it
unfortunately.
was Ricky Wiggins. I mean, obviously, I'd get him on here if he'd do it, but I'm not sure that he's all in the
He probably
podcast.
wouldn't
We'll have to
he wouldn't
see
be
at some
allowed to, I'm sure.
point. Probably not. Although it would be interesting. I have a number of questions for him. But
Yeah, and then the juvenile judge basically let Jerry Chambers out, basically acquitted him, and so he went
acquitted him?
back.
Whoa. What did
Yeah,
we
that's why
even
he
know
was
what happened?
out.
I
And I
know
don't know.
that.
Sorry, Britt, go ahead.
No. I think from what I was reading last night, at least, was I guess the older woman couldn't make a positive identification or something to that effect. But I don't remember anything else about that case except for my husband was one of the guys involved with getting him. He had ran across the street, across Abercorn, to that little like Tiger dealership near Walmart or whatever. And he was caught over there, I guess. That's all I really remember.
Well, they also like there was a glove on the ground, like at the scene of the shooting, like a like he was wearing gloves and there was a glove on the ground.
Like
And
DNA.
well, they did a search warrant on Chambers's house, recovered like the matching glove, and like his DNA was inside of it. It was really like it shouldn't have been like a just a straight, you know, to me there was enough there. You know, no case is perfect, but I felt like that was bullshit. So since we're talking about bullshit judge rulings, I thought that was bullshit.
Well, I don't think I knew that context. Again, this is a case I was on the periphery. I did not know the details, but the OTM 1100 thing was something that Noah Abrams was working a fair bit. I know he worked the later shootings, the September shootings, that came after this, and he may have worked some of this stuff before. I know he had a bunch of aggravated assaults that were related to this, that were assigned to him. And we talked about the breadth of the case, but I don't think I knew a lot of the detail. I had no idea Jerry Chambers had been acquitted of a shooting that where his DNA was involved. That's great.
I mean, if he would have been if he would have been in jail, this, I mean, this wouldn't have happened.
Wow.
Yeah,
So
I say
that's
like it
really
wasn't
powerful.
like you know, it wasn't a weak case, you know what I mean? Put it like
No.
that. Like it wasn't shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and Wiggins is like top notch, so he's not gonna like mess
Yeah,
something up
I've
like
had
that.
cases with him. Oh, that's so disappointing. I'm so sorry. So that happened, that shooting at the mall happened when?
2016.
2016. So we get into 2017. Jerry Chambers is out and about. What's going on at that point?
Well, I mean, it's like the same as it always is. Like it just, I mean, it's just they're shooting back and forth at each other. You know what I mean? Like, and there's a bunch of stuff, right, that like we'll probably never know, like the shit talking on social media and all this kind of stuff. And I know like Tanavian Johnson, I think, was in juvie or something like that when Spencer Stuckey. So Spencer Stuckey was another OTM guy. He was in the car with Jerry Chambers, along with another guy named Gabriel Magulius, which I always felt kind of bad for him too. He got, I think, taken advantage of by these guys, so they, because it was his parents' car that they were in. So I feel like that he had some, well, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I feel like he might have had some developmental disabilities and stuff, and these guys kind of just used him to get the wheels, you know. So he was another, he was still there, and sort of hung out with these guys, but I don't think he wasn't Spencer Stuckey, put it like that.
No, and from like some of the witness statements and stuff, I don't think he did anything. Like his windows were closed. He was sitting in the back seat. Like everything, I mean, he didn't have a gun or anything like that, from what I've heard.
Okay, so Brittany, can you tell me, like, this happened July the 4th of 2017, right?
It did, yeah.
So,
I got the call from Rob, actually. I got called out from Rob.
wow.
I guess I was up. I guess it was my, I was up.
You were up.
I was up for the next murder. Yeah, and I got the call like in the middle of the night, and I responded to City Market. They kind of told me, he kind of told me a little bit about what had happened, but not too much. You didn't really get too much of that. You just kind of got like, hey, we had a murder, this place, it involved this person, like get here, basically.
So you get called out to City Market. What was the call to City Market about?
It was about a shooting, and that's where everything had like started. And then the suspect vehicle had basically crashed in front of five guys. So I actually went to the City Market area to like see kind of what I had. And then I was like, well, there's not much here. And then I drove to the scene, like where the actual vehicle was, and that was probably one of the most horrific like scenes ever. And just like with the victims and stuff, and there was just a lot of chaos. I
So
wasn't,
it
yeah, I
was
wasn't.
July in Savannah. Can you give us a little bit of context for like City Market, this area of town, what it is like just on a normal 4th of July as opposed to this mayhem?
Yeah, so like City Market is a there's a bunch of bars and restaurants. But basically on 4th of July in Savannah, there is a like fireworks display on Hutchinson Island, and there's lots of off or not lots of off duty, but lots of police officers that are working overtime. And then after the fireworks, people start going to the bars and drinking and just like trying to, they were just having a good time.
But this is close in proximity to where you're going to see the fireworks. If you're going to see the
Yeah,
fireworks,
you'll see
it's right
them.
there.
Yeah, it's all downtown. So they could, you could be in City Market and see the fireworks.
Wow. So
So,
you got big crowds, you got big numbers.
yep.
And timing wise, this, and you said it started out with kind of a shooting in City Market, and then there's this horrific wreck, and there's a sequence to it, but what kind of time frame are we talking about? Are we talking about like before fireworks, after fireworks? Was there still a crowd there? What's going on?
Yeah, so this was after fireworks. I believe the two officers that ended up giving chase to Chambers actually were like coming off of like a special duty, like the fireworks duty gig on Hutchinson. They were headed back to the precinct. I don't remember the exact times. I'm trying to here. Actually, I have my report right here. Let me just see about the times because that would be helpful, I feel like. When we're talking about everything.
Yeah, just to give it a little bit of context, I think people, when you think about 4th of July, it's like, well, there it could be massive crowds, it could be just a couple of people still out drinking, like stray people. But my recollection, and I've seen some of the video from this case, it was big crowds still.
Yeah, so actually, I got called out at 12:14. AM on July 5th.
Okay.
Yeah, I got stuff to add to this conversation with you guys.
Wait, when we quit jabbering.
All
Right, go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, there was massive crowds. So I was working. I forget who was with me, but I remember Cogswell was one of the downtown sergeants on downtown duty. I was working like in the office. I was not like in a uniform, I don't think. And there was a few other people that were on shift with me. I think maybe just two. But like I've been to a lot of scenes. I've been to a lot of death scenes. I've been to a lot of shootings. I've been to shootings downtown on River Street during St. Patrick's Day and all kinds of shit. This was like probably the closest thing that I can imagine like a terrorist attack would be like. It was
Oh, wow.
like the first shooting happened in City Market. And for context, it's like River Street's by the river. Parallel to that, if you go up a block, it's Bay Street. And then you go basically perpendicular a block. I forget what that street is where the shooting happened, but it goes towards City Market, and City Market's like one street parallel to that. So it's like all close proximity. And like
You
the
could
first,
hear all of this, right? You were hearing all the radio traffic.
yeah. So the first shooting
Okay.
happens, and like it's like, I don't know, there was like three people shot, I think, right? Was it three or two? I know it was at least two.
It was at least two, and then the one girl ended up taking herself to the hospital. So she was shot, but I don't think she like stayed around. Oh,
Okay, so
since
there was at least two people shot, one in the neck and one like in the leg, which normally like you could say okay whatever, but it could be like upper thigh whatever, like you don't know, right? So it's like shit, two people shot, car flees, that just creates mass chaos, right? Like that's already chaos. People are like screaming. Cogswell was I think working that scene initially, and then it's like moments later, it probably ended up being what, 7 minutes or something like that. I forget what it was, but it was not long. And then like the car comes speeding back down to City Market and like would have crashed into five guys if it didn't hit the pole. But yeah, so then you've got Chambers in the driver's seat of the car, you've got two people dead in the car, you've got Scott Waldrop dismembered in the street, people everywhere, smoke, fire like everywhere. And then there was a third shooting that actually happened more towards Broughton Street that ended
Oh,
up being
wow.
unrelated to this, but there was like a third shooting that happened like right
Yeah.
after the wreck. So like I remember I was kind of drifting towards the City Market thing when the wreck happened. I was there like pretty quickly afterwards, and then the third shooting happens and it was like, are we fucking under attack? Like, what the fuck
Yeah.
is going on? And it was just like people shot, bodies everywhere, smoke, people screaming. Like, you just did, like, when I did probably call Brittany, I had probably had no information. I was just like, there's fucking people shot, bodies everywhere. I just like, I need you here. We're figuring it out.
Yeah. Like I think this is your murder, but I don't know for sure. I just need you to get down here.
Yeah, because that was the other thing. It was like a car wreck, but it was like, I mean, there was, I got from the beginning, I was like, this is not just like a
A
fleeing to elude.
coincidence.
This isn't just like a vehicular by homicide. Like, there's something more to this that's like, dude, like this feels like a murder, not just like a run of the mill, like vehicle wreck. And I remember calling Isabel because at that point it was like
Isabel
Hunger Game.
Hawley?
It was, yeah, it was Hunger Games between her and Frank on who was going to get like the new EIP position. And I was like, talk to Isabel
I'm
and I was like, hey,
laughing, but I
look,
shouldn't
like,
be. I'm sorry. Hunger
because
Games.
Chambers was in custody pretty quickly, which like that part of it was like, all right, like once we kind of figured out a little bit about what happened, it was like, all right, we've got all the players at least like shot dead or in the hospital. So it was like, all right, like now let's just slow the fuck down and piece it together. But it was like, what are we going to charge Chambers with tonight? Because like he's fucking going. And so it was like, dude, this feels like felony murder to me. Like, you tell me if I'm wrong, but like, you know, and so we talked through that a little bit. And I remember Brittany, we talked too about it, but and I'll let you guys go from there. But I mean, it was fucking chaos, dude. It was the most chaotic scene that like overall, I mean, I know we talked about Theron Robbins' scene being like a near riot, but dude, this was like out of
I think
control. Like I literally thought it was like a terrorist attack. I
terrorist
was like,
attack.
dude, are we fucking under attack? Like, what the fuck is happening?
Well, I think what's crazy is where the actual like drive-by shooting happened. Everyone's first instinct is to run east, right? And so, because that's like more towards like where all the bars are and kind of safety is what the way you would feel. But the problem is that that's essentially where the car crashed was like a block up or a street up, and then over a couple of blocks. So it's
Right,
like,
so it's Bay Street, right?
yeah, so like people are fleeing from the incident and they're all going to go east, but then just northeast is where the car crashes,
Right.
Dude, if it wasn't
And
for that telephone pole, there would have been like probably dozens of people like hurt or injured and
oh,
killed
yeah.
inside that Five
Wow.
Guys, dude. Like that, everybody inside there would have been just like fucked.
It, I like I said, I've seen the video of that specifically, and I saw that within days to my recollection, and it just takes all the words. I mean, you cannot express in words what you're seeing on that, like to give the gravity of it. I mean, it is really terrifying, and to be driving the way this guy Jerry Chambers is driving with so many people on the street, and so, just he just didn't care about anything.
And
He was
then
going to give context. He was going like over 60 miles an hour,
I
like
my
on the
understanding is over a
sidewalk when he
hundred
crashed.
at
Like
one point.
at one point he was, but I think when the crash happened, it was like over, I think it was like 65 or 66 miles an hour is what they said. And
I
it
was
was
wondering.
like without like no brakes, right? Like just straight into that telephone pole at that speed. So yeah, like Spencer Stuckey dead, like right on scene. He was the
He was in
front
the
seat
front seat,
passenger.
right?
He was one. He was the one that was out the window shooting in the original. So I'm sorry, Britt. Go ahead. You tell what
No,
happened.
you're good. There's a lot that I don't remember, so I'm glad you're here, kind of filling in everything. So I guess the original shooting happened, in City Market. Two people are shot, and then the car flees. So they put out a bolo of the vehicle, which is like a be on the lookout. And some officers who were about to log off decided that, you know, they're going to, like, I mean, go look for this car, which is just amazing. I mean, if you think about it, like, they were ready to go home. I mean, let's be real. After working those, like, 4th of July duties, you don't want to be
like 12 hours in a uniform, just
yeah, on your feet, like, that's yeah. the worst. Yeah,
look, you just said the word uniform, Rob. Can we talk about what these guys were wearing? Just, you know, I have to do this right now, right?
Yeah, for the record, anybody assigned detail, special detail or not, on 4th of July, you're in a uniform. Like, no. I wasn't, because I was just on shift as an investigator. But had I been, because there are times where, and I think I did have investigators that were assigned on 4th of July duty. Those mm-hmm. guys are all in uniforms. Just like St. Patrick's Day, we're all in uniforms. If you're out working yeah. the holiday, you're in a uniform.
Ham was actually in uniform when I met up with him, because he yeah. kind of like rode second chair. And I remember being like, man, that's got to be uncomfortable. I mean, he didn't have time to go home and change or anything. Let's just, you just go. Yeah, yeah. he was.
And it's
was
fucking hot as fuck, even though it's like
oh,
to midnight.
So
it's still 85 so degrees, 90 degrees, fucking 95% humidity. Just
yes,
fucking
and then you're wearing
Savannah
your
heat.
Vest, and like the yeah. sweat is just like getting all on your shirt. Oh, and then the bugs and the gnats. I do not miss those gnats. Oh.
Hey.
Oh, my dad is from South Georgia, and he always talked about the gnats. I'm like, you're just being a baby. And when I moved to Savannah, I was like, these are the worst things I've ever experienced in my life.
They are.
Everybody smells like
and
a foot.
That season is starting.
Yeah.
So just, you know.
yeah. Awful. Just nasty.
But
you
yeah,
can't
so,
get the stank out of your vest, man.
No.
Like, it's
no.
just, you just fucking smell awful.
The whole time. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. And I'm laughing, but this event was so awful. Because you can imagine, like, there's sweat, and then there's that adrenaline sweat. Like, when like it really is on and you're reacting to something like this,
yeah,
that smell is just worse.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just worse. So
oh, yeah.
You're not confusing it with shit, are you? Like human
no,
shit?
No, we're not talking about like shit rags or anything like that, Rob. I know it can be confusing for some people. But what we were talking about is just that, like, because I've even, like, in trial, you get to that point where you're just, like, you're going and you've been drinking Monster and the caffeine
mm-hmm.
and all that. It's just disgusting. It's gross. I don't
yes,
want to be
do,
around me. It's
I do not miss those smells. I just, like, I'm thinking back and I'm like, oh, yes. Oh, yes. Those smells.
It's visceral. And, of course, it's not nearly as visceral as what you found on
yeah.
Bay Street. So you talked about, like, this is the worst scene. And actually, kind of both of you talked about that. I don't know how to explain that to people, because what happens in car wrecks is so much worse. I mean, when I've talked to like medical examiners, they talk about it being like the worst thing ever. Like,
there was so much damage that we actually had to take things out of the vehicle before we even got a search warrant, like before we could even tow the car, because the car was so mangled that we wouldn't have, like, we would have lost evidence on the way to the, to forensics.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And then even once we did get a search warrant, we actually had to call the fire department, and they actually had to come cut the car. I had forgotten about that, and
yep.
we couldn't even get into it until they cut it. And did they cut it in half, or did they just cut off like the top? I don't remember.
They cut the top off.
Okay.
We might have had to cut it more at the garage. I don't remember, but I know like at
yeah.
least on scene, the top had to get cut off.
Yeah, and then they cut it more at the garage too. Yeah, it was, I mean, the pieces of metal, just like, you know, the sharp pieces everywhere. And you don't realize that, like, that can actually happen to a vehicle, I guess, you know?
Yeah. You feel protected when you're in a car.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, you do.
And this was like a little
SUV, a Hyundai SUV. It's not mm-hmm. like it was like a little Corolla or anything. So, like, you know he had to be going fast to cause this much damage. And from what I remember, there was actually like pieces of like a hat in the mangled stuff.
Yes.
And I don't know if that was Scott's or what, but
oh
yeah, I didn't I don't really know, nor do I want to know, because it's just heartbreaking. But there was a lot of like little things, and then there were like shoes sprayed all, you know, like shoes all over the ground. There were phones on the ground, and I remember just thinking like, "What is this mess? Like, I can't believe this can actually happen."
And you're responsible for it.
Yeah,
you have to make sure that this is something that is preserved. Yeah. And something that, you know, if we're going to present it in court, we've got to have it in like a format that you can make sense of it, right?
Yeah. And you don't really have time to like let your emotions get to you either, like when you're there, because your people are trying to like get things done, and they're trying to open the road back, and they're trying to take measurements and all this stuff. And you're just kind of like, okay, like this is what we got to do. This, you know, this is our job. This is what we have to do. But then kind of when you step away, you're like, wow, that was awful. Like the worst.
For a little context too, like, you know, I'm going to be as respectful as I can describing this, but Scott was split in half, and like, he was like almost a block. A part of him was almost a block down the road. So again, we're talking about like a large scene. And then it's like, you know, you got to protect the evidence, but you also got 8,000 fucking people that are around here trying to like video and take pictures of all this shit. And like, yeah, I mean, that gets tough, right? As like a human being, like you want to like kind of like cover it. And, you know, there's crime scene screens and things like that, but that shit takes time to get there and stuff. And, you know, it was just, I remember that, like everybody, like gawkers and stuff. And it was just like, get the fuck out of here, dude. You know, but that's how far that's how far his body went. It was like,
yeah, and even from
hundreds
the,
of feet.
Yeah, even from like where the car crashed, the body. Like, I even had to ask, like, how far does this go? Like, how far does this like crime scene extend, basically? And I honestly couldn't believe how far it was. It was that far. Yeah, it was like a full block, if not more. Yeah.
It's horrific. And then you've got two dead people who are Jerry Chambers' friends in the car.
Yes. And then Jerry had like no injuries. That's what's crazy to me. I don't know. Sometimes it's just not fair. But no. Besides the point.
So you get to this scene, you're trying to manage it, like direct forensics and all that other stuff. Mm. What else are you trying to do?
So I really wanted to talk to the victims at the original like shooting scene, because I knew if I could talk to them, like maybe they could help me kind of figure out what's going on. Well, Yusuf Maxwell couldn't talk. Like there was nothing I could do. I couldn't get anything from him because he was shot in the neck.
Right.
And so I believe my first interview was actually Jerry.
Wow, Jerry Chambers. So he's the first person you interviewed.
Yeah, so I went to the hospital.
He in custody at that point? Did you have to Mirandize him and everything?
Yeah, I went ahead and Mirandized him just because he was definitely not free to leave.
Right.
He was found at the wheel, so by multiple officers. And you know, honestly, I forgot about this as well. Because there were so many officers on foot, they were actually all running up to Bay Street and yelling for the crowds to get out of the way. And I think more people would have been hurt or killed had they not even just ran up and like were yelling at people to stop or, you know, get out of the road. And so yeah, I forgot about that. But they saw the car crash and
right.
saw him in the driver. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, him right in the driver's seat. So yeah, I went and interviewed him. And then I think a few days later, I interviewed Yusuf, but there were multiple guys with Yusuf at that, like on that corner.
Oh, wow.
I'm trying to think what that road is. That West St. Julian?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It could be. Yeah.
Yeah. So they were on like that corner of City Market. And, but we couldn't identify any of them. We thought maybe it could be this guy. But I didn't know for sure until I had talked with, so Yusuf Maxwell's, I believe is it like a stepbrother, is Jaheim Morris, if I'm not mistaken.
I think they were like half brothers.
Half brothers. Okay. So he was actually at the hospital at one point when I talked to Yusuf, and that's the only way that I was able to even get like another name was talking to Jaheim. Because with these gang shootings, like they want to take things into their own hands. They don't want to tell us any of these people's names and stuff. But so I was able to figure out, I think like there were like five or six guys, maybe. I think there was still one guy I never identified as being there. I could never figure out who he was, anything like that. But and then the other victim who was shot in the leg, I guess he knew. From what I was reading, from what I remember about the interview, is he actually knew, was it? So he knew Spencer Stuckey from like the West Side, I think. And so he named Spencer as being in the passenger seat, like with the gun, basically. And so that was pretty telling. And he didn't say anything about any backseat passengers, windows rolled down, anything like that.
He was almost like he was a little older though too, wasn't he? Like he wasn't really like the target. He just ended up
No.
like being collateral damage of like,
Yes. Wrong place at
yeah,
the wrong time.
because
Yeah.
they don't give
So
a fuck who
much
they
like,
shoot
because
and hit.
he was actually really cool. I remember him. He was really nice. And
So much like Scott Waldrop, he just happened to be out on 4th of July.
Well, yeah, and
Yeah.
everyone goes out on 4th of July down there. If you, especially if you live like within walking distance, so you're gonna go out on
Oh,
4th of July. That's just where all the fun is, and yeah, that's where you want to go.
Yeah.
I just wish I knew how they knew they were on that street corner, you know?
And there's always that question. Like, there's not just that question, so many questions. Like, you know, I get into the phones, and it just there's so much information that I'm sure you probably had to gather. You had to get all of the body cam and the surveillance cameras and all this other stuff just to even show what was happening, right?
So I kind of backtracked where the vehicle had gone. I guess the two officers who were about to like log out and found this car, they found the vehicle in like the Fellwood area, which is off of Bay Street, but it's what do you think? Maybe 2 miles, mile and a half from the accident scene
Yeah,
ish.
probably something like that, mile and a half, I would say.
So I basically started all the way down at the end of, or you know, where started the chase, and then just tried to collect video from any business I could, all the way up to Five Guys where the accident happened.
Wow.
And I was able, there were multiple videos that showed a white SUV traveling at a high rate of speed with a police car with their lights activated following behind them.
Yeah.
So they knew that they were, I mean, he knew he was being chased by the police.
So when you talked to Jerry Chambers, you said you talked to him first. What, if anything, did he tell you?
So he told me that he was in a vehicle with some dudes when he heard shooting. And that it sounded like the gunshots were being like fired at his car. Now we don't know who fired first. We don't. But all he could remember was that he was driving the vehicle and he was scared. And so I was like, what, you know, I asked him, was there, were there police officers behind you? And he said, yes. He told me, yes, there was. And that he admitted to driving as well.
Okay.
So.
So, and of course, you know, there's so much damage to this vehicle. Would there be any way to know if, like, there have been gunshots that hit the vehicle or anything like that?
I don't think so. I
No.
don't think so. There was so much damage.
But even with that, so
But we
you
did
got
find it.
surveillance video from City Market though, right? That's what
Yep.
happened. Did it show people shooting at their vehicle?
You know, and there were shell casings at like where the group was standing. But if I'm not mistaken, it was like two, and I think one came from the victim who was shot in the leg, his gun. And I think that was an accidental, I think that was an accidental thing. I think he was running off and possibly like dropped his gun or like, cause he said he had it in his lap when like all this happened. And so I think that was one of those may have been just an accidental thing. And then Husif did admit to firing. But I'm pretty sure it was Spencer who fired first and then Husif like fired back.
Okay. So
yeah.
You've got obviously this event, this shooting. And then there's all of this chase. The officers, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong. So, like the officers who were chasing, you said they come off duty from Dufusky or Hutchinson Island, and they're in uniform, lights and siren. My understanding is they disengaged, like as things were getting closer to Bay Street, they disengaged. Is that right?
Yeah. They knew that they were getting into like where there were a lot of people, and that it was unsafe. But Jerry wasn't going to stop. It didn't even, yeah. I mean, at one point we were talking, you know, maybe 100 miles an hour, and then maybe he slowed down a little bit, but he was trying to get out of there.
Slowed down to 60.
Yeah, 60. I don't even know what the speed limit is on Bay Street, but I know it's not 60.
It's like 25.
Yeah, I know it's not 60.
It's not 60.
No.
It's not 60. So, and that's like normal daylight hours, not when there are like huge crowds of people. It would be unsafe for the conditions regardless, right?
Exactly. It'd be unsafe to go 5 miles an hour down Bay Street on July 4th, to be honest.
The holidays, yeah, for sure.
And people drinking, and they're not paying attention to those walk signs, and you know, no.
People are stupid.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really terrifying. And it's terrifying to watch because you see the people fleeing from the shots
mm-hmm.
on the video. You see people fleeing from this vehicle coming. I mean, it just,
mm-hmm.
you see the fear, right? And mm-hmm. like you were talking about, Rob, it's like a terrorist attack. It is visceral. It really is very visceral. You said when you spoke to Jerry, did he have anything else to say?
Not really. No. I mean, he wouldn't tell me who the other people were. Obviously, he knew who they were.
The people in the car?
No, the people who were standing on the street.
Mm.
You know, that shot at him, right? Because he
supposedly.
Said, yeah, he said that he heard, you know, shots. He knew who those guys were. But I asked him if he had touched a gun before.
Hmm.
And he said he had touched a bullet shell. And so, but he said he had found it like near his home or something. But we did find like bullets in the car. One gun was under the like front passenger seat, if I remember correctly. One gun was under Spencer, I believe.
Hmm.
Yep.
So yeah, there was guns, and he said that actually the Gabriel guy had actually come and picked him up at his house before like all this happened.
You know, this whole scenario just seems kind of bizarre to me. Like Gabriel is Gabriel's parents' car, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like Gabriel picks him up and says, here, drive my dad's car or my mom's car or whatever. It's like, that
yeah.
seems pretty unlikely. Did you talk to, were the family members of any of these people cooperative with you?
Yes, to an extent. I didn't talk too much to, I talked to them on the phone, Gabriel's family. Someone else had like gone and made the like death notification and all of that. But from what I had found on Facebook, it was through a phone. It was Gabriel's phone, that actually belonged to his mom. He had a call from Jerry Chambers' Facebook. So I guess they, and I guess, I don't know what was said, but I'm sure it was like, hey, come get me or whatever. They did not know that Gabriel was gone with their car. Yeah. So.
Wow. So, and I know that calling on Facebook thing, that's something, you know, Rob taught me about with another case that is kind of adjacent to these groups of people.
that we're going to talk about is an injustice podcast thing, Quaisonly at some point. But that
we should have Brittany on for that too. She worked a shooting with Lil O.
Yeah, goodness.
Yeah, man, I forgot about that case. I forgot about everything.
There's, you know, it is just Savannah.
One word, Savannah.
So the you gather all this evidence, and of course there's more to it than this. You have to sift through, and no one really talks about the unbelievable number of hours that it takes to, you know, pull all this video together and go through all of the Facebook. I mean, how much time are you spending on this?
I don't even remember, to be honest.
Britt, I remember, like, we worked all through the night. I remember me and you out on that video canvas, because it's like, it's City Market, yes! It's Bay Street and everything. Like, that next day was like 110 degrees. Like, we hadn't slept. And we're just going business to business trying to pull video. And, like, dude, like, if you've never slept for, like, 2 days and then you're, like, at a computer or, like, at, like, some, you know, some fucking worker at, like, this hotel that, like, doesn't know how to work the system and you're, like, trying to, like, tell them and you're just, like, just let me fucking do it, you know? And, like,
just give me the mouse. Yes.
Yeah, like, it takes forever and you're just, like, God, dude, it's fucking terrible, dude. Like, it's... And we did that whole next day, dude. And like, I remember one thing I was super pissed about was, so yeah, those were like, there was a lot of things I remember about this case, but I remember that next day being with you, Brittany, and us going just business to business. And it was so fucking hot. And we both just were just dying. We were just like, oh, man, this is fucking terrible, you know?
And we weren't even wearing vests. Like, we were in just like normal. Well, you probably were in like a suit or something. I probably just had on like a polo, but I was sweating. I mean, I sweat profusely. So like, I was probably sweating. And then also people were like, oh, I got to talk to my manager. So like, people wouldn't actually give us the video right away.
Yeah.
So it was just like this constant of having to go back. Here's my card again. Please have them call me. But it was stuff that we knew we needed, but it was so frustrating.
Yeah,
you wanted the people, like, to like already have it on a flash drive for you, but they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, and it's just, it takes so long, and it's like when you're that tired, it's just like trying to like stay awake when somebody's trying to rock you to sleep. You know, it's just like the boredom of it. It's like, oh, and then you're so uncomfortable. You know, like yeah, you haven't gone home, you haven't showered, you're just, you know, and then it gets to the point where you almost get like hypothermic because you're like sweating so much, it's so hot outside, and then you go into these cold ass businesses that are like got it at 50 degrees and you're like, Jesus, you know, like sweat starts drying on you and it's just miserable. And but then also, like, go ahead,
it didn't help that we were like hydrating with Monster at that point either. If we would have hydrated
Monster
with
is liquid.
No, if dude, I'm not saying nothing bad about Monster, dude. Monster fucking helped me solve so many murders, dude. Like,
oh, I mean, I love me. Even when I still drink Monster today, I'm like, ah, homicide.
I remember.
I'm serious. I don't drink Monster with any kind of regularity, but you open up a can, that smells like, oh yeah, crack.
It really, I can't even describe the taste either. Just like,
it's like cotton candy, dude.
Yes, cotton candy. Yeah, yeah, that's good. That's good.
I remember, like, as Brittany was talking about how, like, she was trying to ID the people in the video, and this was as a supervisor, this is something that, like, happened sort of in the background that, like, I was trying to handle and damage control, but, like, there was a push from the department to release the City Market video, like, right away, and I was like, no, we don't want to do that, like, we don't even have these people ID'd yet, like, we need to fucking try to interview them before, like, their video is released. And I remember working with Greg McConnell on it, and Greg supported it, right? Like, we're like, hey, like, yeah, we've got like a legal justification of like not releasing this.
Well, and, right, because it's still under investigation. When you have an open investigation, you don't start releasing video.
Yeah.
Well, then Jen Herman said something, because she was on the email thread, because it was like Gavin and like Jen Herman. And then Jen said something like, thanks, Greg, or something like that. So I thought like it was like an understanding, like it wasn't going to be released. Well, like fucking 9 o'clock news that night, the second night, they fucking released it. And
That's
I was like
insane.
so fucking pissed. I remember I called Britney. I was like, they fucking released the video, but like I was mad. I was like, I thought we weren't fucking releasing this. Like, so I responded on the email thread and was like, who authorized like the release of this video? And like Jen Herman wrote me the shit ass email, like just basically like just tearing on. Like Gavin fucking said something shit to me or whatever. And that's when like I wish like I had just talked to Lumpkin myself, because I was like, if I had talked to Lumpkin, I think he would have listened to me. But it was like through these intermediary like fucking people, and they were like, no, we need to release it. And anyway, like that's the type of shit, like, all right, dude, like there's no public threat. Like everybody, like you can give us 3 more days to fucking work, or 2 more days to work to try to ID these people and do this the right way. And it's just like, nope, we gotta release fucking video because everybody's fucking wanting to know what the hell happened and blah blah blah. And it's like fuck you guys, man. You know, like that shit pissed me off. And then like Jen Herman, the way she fucking like wrote this email to me, it was just like, dude, lady, you don't fucking know me. You know, like
That's
she's
what, well,
talking to
and
me
like,
like I'm a piece of shit. You know, like fuck you.
I mean, like, when is the last time she did a homicide
Yeah,
investigation? She's never
she's a
prosecuted a
fucking city
case.
attorney, dude. You know, like,
Never prosecuted a case. And it is very different when you've actually been a prosecutor. Obviously, there, you understand the urgency and the importance of getting the investigation right for your trial down the road.
down the road. And that's what people weren't thinking about. They were just thinking about what people wanted, like, right away. And I didn't know you had actually gone through all that. I do remember, I think I was at home when that was released. And
Yeah,
I
and I
was,
called you. I was like, I'm
and I think I
sorry.
came
Like,
in. I had to come in because I was like, we have
what
to
the
get, like,
fuck?
I got to get this done now. I got to ID these people.
Yeah.
Because if I would have just sat at home and actually rested, then, I don't even know how
Yeah,
many
'cause that
hours
was
of
all the
sleep I
same day.
got
Like
that.
we'd done the video thing all day, and then you were going home, and you're gonna come back the next day. But then, yeah, you just had to come back in. It's fucking dumb.
I remember having like the murder board and having a picture of all the people staying there and having to go through and be like, okay, this is this victim, this is this guy, this is probably this person, but who knows? And then finding these people, you
Do
can't
we
find
even know? And so I'm trying to
no.
really understand, because you had mentioned, Brittany, that it seemed apparent to you that Chambers and Stuckey, and of course, because they're in the vehicle, is it Mark Lewis or
Yeah, that's right.
they're looking for, they're going to City Market that night looking for a specific group. And so this specific group includes Yusuf Maxwell and Jaheim
Sean.
Morris, or
Yeah,
no?
Jaheim Morris, Conte Johnson,
Okay, and so the groups in at that point in time, Jerry Chambers and Spencer Stuckey are part of which group again?
they're part of the OTM, right?
OTM. Yeah. And so
And
the other guys are 1100 guys, right? The Morris family and all that. So why were they beefing at that point in time? Do we even know?
not that I know of.
Just felt like
It
it.
was just constant back and forth. It was someone disrespected someone. It's always usually what it was.
Yeah, and very rarely was it anything of substance, right? Like when YNIC split, it was because like they were breaking into cars and stealing guns and stuff. And then like one of them would be like, oh, I'll share my gun and like I'll give it back to you next weekend or whatever. And then they wouldn't give him back the gun. And then so then they start shooting at each other. It's like
I'm
that
laughing. We've had
trivial.
a bunch
Like
of cases like that, right? Like
like
with
you shit
deaths.
somebody over a gun, and then so now we're gonna start shooting and killing each other. And then eventually it turns into, you know, enough people get shot and killed. It becomes like, right, you're justifying it by I'm avenging my friend that got killed. You know, like when it really started over something like trivial. But yeah, all it takes is like a social media post, or you know, you disagree over a gun, or you know, something like that, and then it just gets out of control, and then this is like the end result. You know, you get just.
People killed.
Yeah,
Innocent people,
tragedies. Yeah.
And it's not okay. Like, it we're not acting like it is horrible that we lost innocent lives in this, but it's still terrible that Spencer Stuckey died in the way that he did. I mean, yeah, he started it. But Is this the way you want some young person to die on the street like this? No, he should have been brought to court and held accountable and all of those things. And that didn't happen because of the choices that Jerry Chambers made. So you gather all this evidence. It takes hours, days, weeks, months. Because again, you've got search warrants to get the social media. You've got all of this stuff you're still trying to gather. And you know, we've talked about it in other episodes of this show. Like, it's hours of grueling work to go through all that shit. I mean, I've done it. I know how frustrating it is. And you finally get everything pulled together. You take it to the DA's office and you get Matt and Noah. And this case, if I remember right, was indicted like in a bigger way. Like, it was going to have a bunch of other shootings and stuff involved in it. Right. I'm sorry.
No, I was reading about that last night. Because weren't, if I'm not mistaken, Rob, this case, they had like gang charges attached to it at some point.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it was initially indicted like as a felony murder, but then once like a Rafi Williams and Jaheim Morris cases happened, then there was some greater discussion about looping those murders and some other shootings that we could like put good detail and facts into, like looping them all together into one basically giant gang prosecution. And it happened because I remember like Jaheim Morris's case was indicted in that large indictment. But I don't remember if City Market was included in that or not. I know like there was gang charges in the City Market case, but I can't remember if City Market was left off the bigger indictment. I feel like it was, and Matt can probably speak to that, but
yeah, and I have spoken to Matt about it generally. My understanding is that it was indicted as the Great Big Case, and then because of some rulings from the court, and I'm not familiar with all of them, they decided to sever out City Market and just try Jerry Chambers by himself. So what, you know, how much of that was the state making that call versus the court making that call, I can't say. But Jerry was tried by himself.
Yeah.
I think there still were gang charges on that, though. I think there's still gang charges.
Yeah, there were. Because that's the only reason I had to testify was to the gang aspects. Like, I testified in this case, but only to the gang stuff, like everything else Brittany covered.
I think you were identified as an expert for the gang stuff.
Yeah.
I think this actually was the first one. Was that the first time
you were qualified as a gang expert? Could be.
Came back for the other cases or something like that.
For the OTM 1100 stuff, yes, for sure. Okay. I think I might have fully, I think.
Yeah, you definitely
2018
were.
Trial happened before.
Okay.
Chambers trial. Yeah. When did Chambers go to trial? 19, right?
Was that 19 or 20? Actually,
wouldn't have been 20.
It wasn't 20. 19. Okay, so it was 19.
Yeah.
So Foley had already happened, but yeah, for OT, as far as OTM, yeah, that would have been the first trial for that, where I would have testified to the gang stuff.
So, but you've been qualified as an expert on the blood stuff with Kevin Smith and State 18.
Right.
Because we tried that in 18.
Yeah.
So you have, you're presenting all this evidence, right? You have the officers from the scene. You have the officers who were involved in this chase testify, right? Am I missing something?
Yeah. So, no. I know Bruner testified. Did Sylvester? I'm trying to remember if Sylvester testified.
I think he may not have, but
because she was a passenger. I don't know. I think maybe he had already left the department or something, and they couldn't get him back, or there was something. But she was the passenger in the car, so it didn't really matter.
Right. So she testifies. She comes to court like in uniform and stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. From what I remember, she may have been dressed up, but she had a badge. And it was displayed
about this because the reality is, you You go through this whole trial and it's a fight. I don't care like who you're trying the case against. It is a fight every single time when you get to court. Am I missing something? Do you all remember anything about this trial being different from that?
No, it's always a fight. Yeah, always.
Because if I remember, you know, from what I've seen, I think it was Bob Etheridge was defending him, and tried many cases with Bob. So he was never going to just like roll over for anything.
No, no. I mean, and I know that's their job. They're not supposed to, but like,
no.
Sometimes when there's evidence, it's like, come on, you know?
Right. So I know that there was a whole lot of sanitizing this case in motions, because there were a ton of motion hearings in this case.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Like, this is one thing that really got me upset. And then I'll shut up and let you guys talk. But like,
no.
They wouldn't allow the pictures of like Waldrop's body in the street. Yeah, and I'm like, because it's like what shocks the conscience and stuff like that. And I'm just like, fuck you guys, dude. Like, I had to see that shit. Like, this is what happened. This was the result, dude. This is what happened to this man. Like, the jury should fucking see it. Like,
I've never understood that about any pictures. Like, if this is what happened at the crime scene, why do we have to not show these pictures? Like, it really puts everything together and puts it all into perspective. Like, this is what happened. I'll never understand that.
Honestly, you know, the case law is pretty, it's pretty clear that yes, these things should come in if they are relevant. And the idea is that what makes them not relevant is that they're so prejudicial that, you know, a person can't get a fair trial, right? So, or they're duplicates. Like, you can't have 50 different angles of body parts, you know, that kind of
thing. Yeah, that makes sense, but that, like, we aren't allowed to show any, and like that's bullshit.
And that to me is bullshit. Like, you know, this is the consequence of your actions. And there's case law that says consequence of your actions, that stuff comes in. Mm-hmm. That stuff comes in. And, you know, there were a lot of different discussions about how to present autopsies in this case. I wasn't privy to all of them. I know there had been a discussion about, like, you put them in a folder and you don't like screen. And I guess that even that was something that was, you know, so things had been so restricted at that point. Mm-hmm. That, like, it's almost like you lose track of what you're allowed to do when you're a prosecutor and you're presenting evidence and you've been told you can't do these like 525 things. You know, you're trying, when you're trying the case, to keep in mind all the things you're not allowed to do, and that it's just wrong, right? Like, you know, we're here to present the evidence, and, you know, the jury needs to know what happened, because if you cut too much out, they don't get the full picture. They don't understand what happened. And I'm concerned that while it was made very clear to the jury, because there was all this video and there were the officers in person and the court saw it, and so many things about this case that were very obvious on the ground, that once it got up to the appellate courts, it got lost. Like, there's something lost in translation when, you know, I guess, I don't know. We're going to get to what happened on appeal in just a second, because I feel the need to talk about it because it makes me mad. But so you're talking about things being just cut out and cut out and cut out. Did you feel that way when you all were presenting it to the jury? Like, you had to walk on eggshells a little bit?
Oh, yeah. But I always felt that way. Mm. Like, I'm like, what can I say again? Like, am I allowed to? Yeah, I wouldn't want to do y'all's job at all. Like, there, I would not do well at all.
That's part of the reason I curse.
Man, I mean, the things that are like, so like, you're limited on so many things, and I just would never remember what those things were.
Yeah, you know, it is in the moment, and especially because if the ground keeps shifting. Yeah. And it can in trial. I don't know if that happened with y'all or not. I got the impression that there was just so much care taken for like let's make this all nice for Jerry Chambers.
There was a lot of sidebars.
Yeah, well, we gotta make sure that he's happy. Like, I don't care if he's happy.
Yeah, I don't care
like, if he's comfortable. He did this.
Yeah.
But you present this to the jury. Did the jury seem to be getting at the time? Were they confused?
No. I mean, everyone, it was pretty straightforward, honestly. At the time, I mean, I thought it was pretty straightforward. I don't even think they deliberated for that long, from what I remember. Because I was living in Atlanta at the time. And so I was there just for the week. And mm-hmm. I don't remember like waiting too long with Matt for the decision.
That's good news.
Yeah, it's good news.
So again, it's not that complicated. You actually see, we haven't talked about it too much, but you see Scott Waldrop getting hit on video. Mm-hmm. And I cannot say enough good things. And I know I say it every time we talk about anything involving video with Matt and Jameson Dowd. But they put together the segments of the video, so it was almost seamless, like mm-hmm. to go from the body cam of the officers in the vehicle that's behind Jerry Chambers to the surveillance video to the body cam of the officers responding to the vehicle itself. You see everything.
And yeah, I forgot they had like made it all one thing. That was really cool.
Yeah, and this was played for the jury. I wasn't there, but I'm guessing at least three times, because I know.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right.
And it might have gotten like stopped and paused, and let's look at this a little more closely, because I know Matt Breeden. Was this another one of his amazing openings? Because I have trouble gauging that one he did in Foley was like probably the best I've ever seen. So how did you see opening? You didn't, Rob. You were not in the courtroom, were you?
No, I didn't see any of that stuff.
I did. I mean, he did a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, he was passionate too, and you know, and but not overly in your face, because you know, some people can scream and stuff, but no, he was great.
Yeah. And jury got it.
Yeah.
The questions came up at trial, from what I understand, about, you know, were these officers in uniform? And again, I'm saying that because it just boggles my mind that this actually is the issue that the Supreme Court got hung up on.
Yeah, this is not, when someone sent me the like the news article about it being reversed, I was like, okay, like what did I do wrong? Right. Like that was my first thought. And then I like read it and I was like, are you kidding? This is what we're hung up on?
Yeah.
I just,
so we haven't said it so far. So, so get the conviction. And what normally happens is that there's a motion for new trial filed. It was our habit, in major case, to keep our cases on appeal, like to keep it through the motion for new trial and trial and handle it on appeal, just because there are these situations, there are factual issues that can get lost in the mm-hmm. shuffle, right? Like, you know, a new person looks at it and they don't have time or whatever. But Matt left the office and the appeal went up and it was handled by someone in the president administration's office, including through oral argument. And I watched the oral argument and I was bothered by what I saw, because the prosecutor who was handling the oral argument, it was clear to me he'd not looked at the video, any of it. And again, I know Matt Breeden, I've tried a bunch of cases with him. Like, he's all about the visual video, everything. And if you don't look, and especially in this case, because it's all there, like the whole case is on video, basically. I mean, aside from you've got people identifying who the players are, it's all the video, and including the video or audio, I guess, of Jerry Chambers when he spoke to you, Brittany. Mm-hmm. So that, again, it's a recording. It's not going to be fully transcribed by the court reporter. They're just going to say, you know, recording was played. Mm-hmm. You got to look at it, right?
But even in my report, I was pretty good. I think I was almost too annoying, with like transcribing my interviews.
It's not.
I'm telling you. I didn't want to go back and listen to those interviews. I wanted just to be able to read the summary and be done. And I felt like I did a pretty good job, especially of dealing with these, of just like stating the points that were said, what I asked, what they said. It's right there. It's right there in the report.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but as far as exhibits that would be in the record of the trial court, you've got the transcript, you've got the discs, right? And when I watched the oral argument, it was clear to me that several of the justices, and it stuck out to me, as Justice Libero and Justice Colvin, had clearly looked at the video more carefully than the prosecutor had. I mean, I honestly don't think the prosecutor looked at it at all. And they're like, well, can't you see? Because the argument, the issue that was raised, the issue on which this case was reversed, was that the officers in the vehicle that were pursuing Jerry Chambers were not in uniform. So those officers appear in the body cam video in uniform.
And from what I remember, it was very obvious who they were. I mean, very, very obvious. Because I think there were just two female officers, and one of the body cams was on one of the females. So there's only, that leaves one female officer.
Right. Who's there in uniform.
There, yeah.
Yeah, it says police, you know, all those things. But the way the statute reads, so the issue on appeal was whether or not they were in uniform, because the fleeing and eluding statute, which is the underlying felony for felony murder in this case, and it was never interpreted this way before, but was that it has to be by an officer that is in a vehicle that is identified by lights and siren, and in uniform. Now, of course, at 100 miles an hour in the middle of the night, are you seeing whether the officer's in uniform? I mean, they're behind you. You can't see them. So, no. You know, the whole purpose of their being in uniform is that authority, right? Like you should be submitting to the authority of the officer. Mm-hmm. And they were in uniform. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But the argument was not presented. The facts were not pointed to that, like, hey, this is the officer. She identified her body cam as her body cam, right? Like, yes, this is my body cam. You know, she's like, and that's you on the body cam. Yeah. You know, those things would be in the transcript. Because in order to introduce the exhibit, you've got to lay that foundation. I've done this. I know Matt knows how to do it. I don't doubt that it happened, and he says that it did. So why is it that at oral argument, no one's saying that? But you all read the opinion. Did I miss something? Or it seems to me that the Supreme Court's like, well, no one is saying that it's the same people, or no one at this level is saying it, so we're just going to ignore the record. That's the way it reads to me.
Yeah, essentially, basically. And that, because they didn't say on the stand that they were in uniform, everything else is
the video's irrelevant,
null and void or something. I don't know.
It's just even
more mad than I was.
I'm furious. I'm just livid about this, because again, you know, and I also know the legal context, because for decades, at least 20 years, if not more, prior to this appellate decision, it was understood by the Georgia Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals, that for fleeing and eluding in a situation that involves a high-speed chase, whether or not the officer driving the marked vehicle is in uniform or not is not, you know, something that you have to prove separately. Because wow. To give full meaning to the statute in that context, you know, you have to use your common sense, right?
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing it talked about. It was like saying, you know, the jury needs to use their common sense and stuff. And I'm like, I would think most average people, when there's a police car behind them, would know that that's a police officer with their lights blaring.
Yeah.
I yeah. It blows my mind.
But so I know both of you read through not just the majority opinion, but also the dissenting opinion, which goes into excruciating detail about the record, even though it wasn't pointed to by the prosecutor on appeal. The record that says, here's this video and here's this officer in uniform. I mean, you can see it. I'm not over it. I am not over the fact that they ignored all of this evidence just to reach whatever insane conclusion about this statute. Well, it says, and so, we're just going to reverse this. In a case that where three people are dead.
Yeah, that, I think to me that's one of the most frustrating things, obviously, about this case specifically. Like, it's like an exercise in academics at this point related to like the meaning of like the reversal. And it's like, yeah, like we're not talking about an academic exercise. We're not, we're talking about people's lives and we're talking about, people's deaths. And it's like you can't every the whole thing of it is just so fragile. And I guess, it's kind of to me one of the reasons why, like, the system can beat people down, because it's like, I mean, I think about Brittany and how much time and effort and energy she put into the case. And I'll say, like, this case specifically probably wasn't, well, definitely was not her most challenging investigatively. Like, I mean, I saw her do some like magician shit with like a straight like alien dumped on the
Wallet.
side of a road with no, yeah, like with no leads, right? Where she like pulled
Deborah
some shit
Garner.
out and
Deborah Garner, literally
solved it,
Garner.
right? Like, right, exactly. So it wasn't the most, investigatively the most challenging I've seen her cover, but it was probably one of the most labor intensive because of like the high profile nature of it, the amount of video involved, like the amount of witnesses that needed to be interviewed. Like, it was a ton of work. So you get it to that point and then you're like, all right, like hopefully it, you get it indicted and then you get it through a jury trial and you're like, oh, finally, like, it went the way it was supposed to. Well, it's like not so fast, like here we are fucking what, 7 fucking years later, and it's like, no, because of this little fucking thing, like we're gonna send this shit back. And like, not only that, it's like no longer does this dude have to spend the rest of his life in prison. Like, he gets a maximum of 15 years, and it's like, what the
What am I
fuck? Like,
actually? Yeah.
and he already beat one case, right? Like, he already beat that fucking Savannah mall robbery. So it's like, how many chances does a fucking person get? Like, do you really think he's gonna rehabilitate himself? Like,
I
he
was just about to
fucking
say that,
shot
like,
an old, yeah, he shot an old
yeah.
lady in the fucking chest. And then 6 months later, he fucking kills three people. Like, fuck that
He
dude.
obviously didn't learn a thing from the Savannah
You've been
thing,
in the same room with him, Brittany. Does
Yeah,
this
oh
guy,
well.
like, what did he have remorse at the time?
No. He was so frustrating. You just want to like flick someone because they're being like so rude and hateful, and just like that they didn't even really like they don't care. They li like he literally didn't care. And that was really, really sad to me. Like, dude, just say like you're sorry or whatever, but all he's thinking about am I gonna get next? Like,
Oh my God.
what am I gonna do next to get at these people that were shooting at me? Like, that's what I imagine is going on in his
Wow.
head. He was not a kind person. They brought him to headquarters after he was discharged from the hospital, and he told me he didn't want to talk again because he had already talked at the hospital. Which was fine. I didn't want to talk to him anyways, but I didn't need to talk to him anyways. But like, show some remorse. Just show
Yeah.
a little bit of respect too. Like,
Right.
you killed someone. It's all over the news.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like it's like I said, it's so fragile. Like, it takes everything working the way it should for it to even have a chance at working, right? Like, the investigation needs to be good. There needs to be good police. There needs to be good prosecutors. There needs to be good judges. There needs to be good, appellate lawyers. There needs to be good appellate judges. Like, it just you have to run the gamut, and there's just so many variables there. It's like, it's amazing that like any case survives and makes it to justice. It's just insane.
Well, this is certainly not justice for the people who were killed or for the community. I mean, you know, the effect this has, and you talk about demoralizing. You know, you talked about it being demoralizing for y'all, and it is. I mean, there's no question about that. It's demoralizing to me as a prosecutor. Like, you know, I'm just getting disheartened in the state of, you know, everything, not just the world, but also like the criminal justice system and the bench and, you know, all of the things. It's extremely disappointing to me that, you know, oh, we're, well, you know, the word is and, so we're just going to reverse these murder convictions. When I have seen them say, you know, because we are asserting a new interpretation of the law, the trial court's not at fault here, and but going forward, this is the way it's going to be. That's not what they did here. You know, I it just it's just like they're shrugging off the fact that this community, and it wasn't just like there's no small murder, but this was not one murder, it's three, and it was a terrorist. I mean, you know, honestly, if we could have identified all of the people who were terrified by this vehicle, you know, like shot like a bullet down Bay Street, you know, you could charge them with ag assault for every single one of those. Like, this is a much more massive case than it appears on its face, right? But he's being held accountable for the easy stuff. And yet they can't even do that. The Georgia Supreme Court can't even do that. Like, you know, it's almost reinforcing that idea that, oh, it's the police's fault because they were chasing you. It's like, that's not factual. It's your fault for shooting at people. It's your fault for fleeing in those conditions at a high rate of speed and putting people in danger. That is not the fault of the police that you're trying to get this person who shot at people off the street.
Exactly.
I'm
And the city should be scared when he gets out. I mean, who knows? Who knows what he's gonna do?
He's probably gonna get paroled in like a couple weeks.
Well,
Probably. quite possibly. I don't know if he's been
If he's not
resentenced on,
already, who knows?
well, right. I don't know if he's been resentenced on the homicide by vehicle counts that are left in play, but you know, they're parolable. I mean, you know.
Oh, and he had I read somewhere that he had 27 disciplinary actions.
Oh,
Like,
no way.
but that was like the start of it. Like, that wasn't even, I think that article was from like years ago.
Wait, 27 disciplinary actions while he's in prison?
While he's, yeah, or in jail. I don't know if it was jail or prison. I don't remember when the article was. Let me see. Hold on. I think I actually took a picture of that because I was like, that's wild.
You know, and that's the thing, no one pays
No, I don't
attention
have
to it.
it.
It's like, and we could have whole episodes about the parole board at some point in time. I do want to do that because just it is horrific the things that happen with people being released accidentally or being released, you know, early, or you know, just like, oh, well, you know, that shooting wasn't that bad, we'll let you out, you know, that kind of thing. I've had that happen to me, like, you know, someone's put on probation like deliberately and to pay restitution, and they don't pay restitution, and parole, they get revoked in full. Parole just lets them out in 2 weeks. And you're like, are you kidding me? And the whole idea was this person was supposed to do the rest of the 20 years. So that other 18 years is what they're supposed to be doing. And you just are letting him out.
No, he'll definitely get out now. Like,
Yeah.
oh, you're just a vehicular homicide case? All right, you're
Yeah.
out.
Yeah. Yeah. Because all they look at is the name, the
Yeah,
name of
the
the charge.
charge.
They don't pay any attention to the facts. None. I don't have good things to say. You know, like I said, I'm starting this series on injustice because we've seen both. And you try to make it right, you do everything in your power to make it right, and you guys did. This is not injustice caused by you. So I appreciate you coming on and talking about it. We're going to revisit this issue with other cases for sure. But thank you. I really appreciate
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
it.
The destructive effects of this reversal are hard to fathom and are only beginning to be felt by the Savannah community. But the legal ramifications are even more demoralizing. In our next episode, I'll sit down with lead trial prosecutor Matt Breeden to talk about the breakdown that led to this reversal and how a community needs to hold its institutions accountable. Tune in.